Today is my big breast cancer journey Q&A episode. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Jessica Vallant, a physical therapist and Pilates teacher, and I want to bring science-based knowledge, empathy, courage, support, love, and hopefully some fun to the journeys we have with our bodies. There is hope and strength in your body, and my goal is to help you find it.
Hi, welcome back to Meet Your Body. Today is a big episode. I probably have a lot to say today, and I'm answering all of your questions. So it has been 12 and a half weeks, almost 13 weeks since my bilateral mastectomy surgery, and I've released a couple podcast episodes. So I'm going to have a lot of resources for you below, because I know, especially if you have recently been diagnosed or it's suddenly a new part of your journey or a new part of a loved one's journey and you're just searching, you might have just come across this episode. So please know I have some other resources and I'll have those links below. I have some YouTube videos, some exercise videos, post-mastectomy exercise videos. I have a resource guide with links to products that really helped me. I have some previous podcast episodes. And then on my Instagram, which is Jessica Vallant Pilates, if you go to my highlights, you'll see BC number one and BC number two. And that's a lot of real-time stuff if you wanted to kind of search through that. So again, those resources will be below if you want to backtrack and kind of go through all of the resources I have. And today's episode is basically a full Q&A. You all have sent me so many questions throughout all of this, and I've kept track of them. And so I'm just going through and answering all of them. So a little, some of it will be review. Again, if you have followed me along this journey, you'll know some of these answers. So some of it will be review. Some of it will probably be new, but I'm really just, I wrote them all down. So I'm just reading down them and answering them all for you today. And I'm just going to get right into it. I'll give a little bit of context. And knowing this episode was coming, I definitely, to be completely honest, I still feel pretty vulnerable and raw talking about this. Like I said, it's just been 12 and a half weeks. It's only been like 4 months since I was diagnosed. So it still feels kind of new. I'm still in the middle of it. I'm still processing it. And so I find to be able to kind of get into questions like this and give you all the information, I want to do it in real time because I want you to have it. And I think it helps me to talk about it in real time so I don't forget. I want to give you this information. And also because it is kind of still vulnerable and raw, I kind of go to my clinical physical therapy mind in order to answer it. So that's the way I'll be doing it today. So to start with, I will review the story of how all this happened, and this is going to answer actually a lot of questions. So I've had a lot of questions about like signs and symptoms that I had beforehand and how I was diagnosed, all of that. So I'm going to tell you all of it and answer a lot of questions within that. So I did not have any signs or symptoms. I did not feel a lump. I didn't have pain. I had nothing. I just had my annual mammogram scheduled in November. November 2023, I had my annual mammogram. I was 45 years old then, 46 now, but I was 45 then, and I had been getting annual mammograms since I was 40, as recommended for me. I do not have any family history of breast cancer or ovarian cancer, all right? So it's not in my family history whatsoever. I had had one abnormal mammogram 4 years ago, and it came back, and I had to have a biopsy. It came back negative, and I was told I had dense breast tissue, which is common for so many of us. That was the only history I had. So November 2023, I just had my annual mammogram. Like I said, no symptoms whatsoever, no thought whatsoever, just knowing, oh gosh, it could come back as dense again. What a bummer. So, and it did. So I had my mammogram. I was called maybe 2 or 3 days later and told it was abnormal and they want further imaging. So it was probably like the week after that that I got scheduled for my follow-up. I mean, maybe within 5 days. They usually do it pretty quickly in my experience. So I went back for the follow-up, and it's basically just another mammogram with more imaging. and it's read on the spot. That's the nice thing, is that the radiologist is there and they read it while you're changing. Like, so you're changing and you're waiting and they're reading it. So you will know when you walk out what's going on. And so I was told the radiologist wants to see you. And I knew at that point, probably wasn't good. And she said, you know, it looks like it did 4 years ago. So I'm not really worried, but it's grown, it's spread. And she said, that's the part I don't like. She said, I am pretty darn sure this is just what it was before, just dense breast tissue. But I would be remiss to not recommend a biopsy because I just don't exactly know why it's spread. And I said, okay, we need to do a biopsy. And honestly, I didn't want to do one. I didn't think I probably needed to do one. They're painful. I don't like them. But I said, yeah, of course, if your radiologist says you need a biopsy, you're going to do it. And we were going out of town the next day for 2 weeks. And she said, no problem, just do it when you get back. So that was hard. It was a hard 2 weeks of waiting for the biopsy. I had the biopsy when I got home. We are at the end of November now. It was like the last day of November I had the biopsy and waited on a call for the results, which took longer than I thought they would. And I got the call and I knew what it probably was because I knew the number, and I answered and they said, hey, do you have a moment to talk? And that's when I knew. And as I said, yes. And so they said that I had been diagnosed, the biopsy came back positive, and I was diagnosed with stage 0 DCIS. So that covers a lot of your questions about any symptoms or health history or anything. No, I had none of it. The only reason this was diagnosed was because of my yearly mammogram. That's it. I will tell you to get your mammogram because that's how this was diagnosed for me. So that answers kind of all of that. So let's go into what DCIS stage 0 is, because I've had a lot of questions about that as well. I've had questions about, you know, why didn't you feel a lump, and is there ever a lump with stage 0, and is stage 0 actually even cancer, and all of those things. So yes, stage 0 in breast cancer, stage 0 is cancer, and it's DCIS, which stands for ductal carcinoma in situ. It means that the cancer is still within the ducts, the milk ducts. That's where it was found. It has not spread outside the ducts. Once it does, it's invasive carcinoma, and that's when you get into the staging 1, 2, 3, 4, so, you know. Mine's stage 0, which just meant it had not spread outside the ducts. And yes, as the oncologist, or sorry, the radiologist told me on the phone, she just emphasized, this is cancer. You need to deal with this. Yes, it's cancer. It's stage 0. And if you're going to be diagnosed with breast cancer, this is the one you want. So yes, I was very lucky in that respect. But yes, it is cancer, DCIS. And no, I did not have a lump. And how that was explained to me later, because so you do further testing, I'll get into that in a minute, but on further testing, and then once they did the mastectomy, they found that it was very, very widespread and large. And I kept asking, like, why didn't I feel a lump? Because I was very small chested. I mean, if there was a lump as big as they said, or it was as widespread, which was very widespread, I couldn't figure out why I didn't feel a lump. So she explained it to me, that the way it is, the way the DCIS forms throughout the ducts is, again, it stays within the ducts. So imagine it as like tons of grains of sand within all the ducts being spread out. It doesn't form into a lump that you would feel. It's just widespread throughout the whole breast in all of the ducts. So you're not going to feel a lump. She said, very rarely do you feel a lump with that. So that's why I never did. But it was throughout the entire breast. So that explains why I didn't feel the lump. And as for what happens, I think this is important to know, at least for me, and for anyone else kind of going through it. I really had no idea what happened once you were diagnosed with cancer. I mean, why would I? Why would anyone? You hope you never have to find out. But I will say I was in a great hospital system. And I right away, so I talked to the radiologist and, you know, I have a lot of questions. I kind of knew the things to ask, being a physical therapist and having the medical history that I do. And I was given a patient navigator, and that was one of the most helpful things. is right away, at least in the system I was in, and this is very common, you're diagnosed with cancer and immediately you're put into that system within, again, it was the hospital system I was in. I was immediately put into that kind of track or that piece of the hospital system. I was immediately put into oncology and I was given a patient navigator to help me with everything that was coming because there was a lot. There's a lot of testing that needs to be done and you meet with an oncologist and you meet with a surgeon. You possibly meet with a plastic surgeon. You have to have a MRI done very quickly to see if you have it in your lymph nodes and if it's spread. There's a lot that has to happen and it happens in a certain order and they help with insurance and all of that. And so that was the first person I talked to after the radiologist. I went home very upset and talked to my husband and was in a fog and the patient navigator called me, I think within 2 or 3 hours, just to help that process. She introduced herself. She said, this is what's coming. This is who you're going to see. And I'm going to call this person and tell them to call you. I'm going to call this person and tell them to call you. And so that was really helpful. And many times you'll have an option to pick your own doctors. I mean, you can do research and find doctors. I'll just say that that is completely personal choice on whether you want to do a lot of research and take the time and go outside of that hospital system you're in. There's so many choices. You can ask friends who've been through it, those kind of things. I found out the names that day from the patient coordinator of who was in their system. Because to me, this is just my personality. It was helpful that it was within one system. I wanted to be able to go one place for as many appointments as I could. I wanted them to communicate easily. I wanted paperwork sent back and forth easily. I wanted it to be efficient. That was important to me. So I got the names from her of who they use and who she was going to start putting calls into. And then I took those names to some trusted sources I have. I have friends who are doctors. I have friends who've been through this. My husband has some friends. He asked. And as soon as it came back from some of them that they liked these doctors, I was like, great, done. That's all I need to know. That's it. I'm good. That was me. I wanted it efficient, and I needed it to be simple for communication for myself. And I needed it to be covered by insurance. So knowing that it was in network was really important. But again, you can take the time to research and find your own doctors. You absolutely can. But just know having the patient coordinator can be very helpful. So let's go into probably the most common question that I get and have gotten, which is why I chose a mastectomy, why they did a mastectomy, and then why it was bilateral. When I had stage zero, which I know sounds very, oh, it's only stage zero. I've gotten that a lot, by the way. It's only stage zero. I'm just going to throw it out there. Don't ever say that to anyone, please. If you ever know anyone who has been diagnosed with breast cancer and it's DCIS stage zero, don't say, oh, it's only stage zero. My doctors were very clear and very compassionate, and my oncologist was very clear and very compassionate, saying, yes, this is the type you want if you're going to have it. And also, I'm so sorry. It's so scary. It is cancer, and we're treating it as such because it is cancer. You now have cancer. So don't say to anyone, it's only stage zero. I know it's tempting to do that, right? To brush it off or to try to be positive. It doesn't feel that way when you're the patient. It doesn't feel that way when you're told you have cancer and it's stage zero. It doesn't feel like, oh, great. Awesome. I have the good kind. Yes, I am thankful. Don't ever, ever misconstrue that to say, I am so grateful. I am so lucky. And I don't know sometimes why I am. I struggle with that a lot. There's a lot of guilt around it. I am so lucky. And also, it's cancer. So I just want to throw it out there. If you're ever talking to anyone or if it's you, I'm here to validate you. I see you. And it's hard no matter what stage it is. And yes, those of us with stage zero, we are very lucky. It's caught early. I am extremely lucky. Okay, so I went and saw my surgeon first, probably 2 weeks after I was diagnosed. And I want to say this also, one of the best pieces of advice I got from a member actually who reached out to me, a very wonderful member who reached out to me from the beginning and was very helpful because she went through this journey. And she said, you will make the decisions that are right for you. There are so many decisions to make and you just do the one that's right for you. And that's what I'm here to tell you also. Everything I say to you today are the decisions either that were recommended by my doctor or that I had to make or that were right for me in a situation. When you are in this story that you never wanted to be in, you have to decide between a lot of bad things. Like, I didn't want any of this. I didn't want to have to choose what kind of implants. I didn't want to choose implants or not. I didn't want to choose one mastectomy or bilateral. I didn't want any of that. I wanted to make none of those choices. When you are thrust into this, you have to make a lot of choices between things that you never wanted to choose between. So it's already kind of hard. And then also you have to do what's right for you, and we are all different. So when I'm telling you my choices today, just know they were my choices with my story and my history and my body and my family and my feelings and all of that, okay? And my personality and character. It's just built into us. So please know that. Also know, if you want some context on my health history, you can listen to so many podcasts where I talk about it. I had, up until this point, had 4 major surgeries. First time in the hospital, I was 8 years old. That's when it started. I've had so many diagnoses and so many tests and so many unknowns that I have a very convoluted and deep and long and loving relationship with medicine and with procedures and with my body and all of that. So I want to say this because it really hit me the other day. That informed a lot of how I have processed this and the choices I've made. It is very different if this is your first time ever being diagnosed with something. If this is your first time ever having to make a choice or go under anesthesia or have a surgery, it is going to look very different. And I want to honor that. And I want you to know that it will look different. And please go back and listen. I have a lot of podcasts and YouTube videos about how to prepare for surgery, about how to mourn, that you need to mourn before surgery, how to stay positive in the midst of chronic pain and chronic issues, because I've been through those. And so I think a lot of the work I had done previously, not around cancer, that's a whole different thing. But I had done some around those things. So again, my choices were based on some of that information that I had, okay? So hopefully that helps a little bit. But I knew even before going to see my surgeon that if I had a lot of different choices I needed to make, I was open to a mastectomy. I didn't want to question the rest of my life if it was going to come back. Okay, that's not how I work well. I do not work well under unknowns, and I do not work well under anxiety, and I can live in that place and I don't like it. Also, like I said, I've had a very long, deep relationship with my body. I have gone through surgery, so many surgeries and things I didn't want to, and I've lost body parts. And so having a mastectomy, while I never wanted to make that choice, probably didn't feel as scary to me as it could to you or someone else, because I've kind of had to go through that journey a little bit already of accepting my body in whatever way, shape, or form it's in. Okay, so I wanted to throw that out there, that already I was open to that, knowing myself, and my husband and I had already had a conversation around that, and we were both very much on the same page. So when I went in to see my surgeon, she had the MRI results. She had everything. It was my first time meeting her. And just so you know, when I say surgeon, I'm sorry, I hope this isn't crass, but it's the only way I can really explain it. Your surgeon is someone who specializes in this, and she's the one who does the mastectomy. She's the one who will take them off. Then, if you choose to have any kind of implants or reconstruction, it's the plastic surgeon who does that, who will come and bring them back or put them back on. Okay. So when I say surgeon, that's my breast surgeon who does the mastectomy itself. And then I have a plastic surgeon who does the rest and puts them back in. Okay. So anyway, the surgeon was the first one I saw. It was after my MRI results. So she had that. She had the biopsy results. And by the way, my MRI showed no lymph node involvement. So again, very lucky, no lymph node involvement and no involvement in the right. They didn't find anything on the right. So this was all on the left. So I saw her, and generally your choices, okay, if it's DCIS and it has not spread, typically they're looking at either a lumpectomy where they just take out the lump or a mastectomy where they remove the whole breast. So I'm going to tell you what she told me, and then I'll tell you kind of my understanding too. I saw her, again, just a lesson. The first thing each of my doctors, plastic surgeon, oncologist, the very first thing they all said to me was, I am so sorry you're here. I am so sorry you're going through this. Also, I'm here to walk you through it, and you're going to be okay. Like, I can't even explain to you the power of those words. So I was so grateful for that. And then the next thing she said was, I've seen your results, and I want you to know, I can't do a lumpectomy for you with this. The tumor is so large and it's moved to your chest wall. It's very big and it's very close to your chest wall. And so they have to take the lump or the breast, you know, the cancerous tissue, and they take a margin around it, which means they take extra tissue around it to be safe. And she said at that point, and I even said it for her, I said, you'd be taking my whole breast. I'm so small. Small chested. She said, exactly. A lumpectomy would be taking your entire breast. I, in good faith, cannot do that. And she even said, she's like, I'd have to send you to another doctor to agree to do that because I can't in good faith do that. So for those of you asking, one, I wasn't even a candidate for lumpectomy. Okay. Which is why the mastectomy came. The next choice is one side, just take the left. Or do bilateral. Again, this is my personality, but this is just me. But just know, for me, it wasn't even a choice. I'm like, take them both. I didn't hesitate. And I knew that going in. I was prepped. I prepped myself. I did not hesitate for lots of reasons. But one, again, I don't want to keep having mammograms. I've already had one removed. Why do I want to keep having mammograms on the other? Why do I want that worry? Because I know myself, I would worry constantly, and I'd probably constantly get abnormal mammograms because I have dense breast tissue. I'd have to keep getting biopsies. I'd have a higher level of recurrence because I already have a history of breast cancer. So then possibly I'm looking at a second surgery later on if they find that it does come back. And I have a mismatched pair. So, which aesthetics don't really, I'll get to that. Anyway, I have a mismatched pair, which was the least of my concerns, but it was part of it. So for me, if we're taking one, take them both. Because with the kind of cancer I had and no lymph node involvement, as long as everything in pathology showed what we hoped after surgery, I would not have any higher incidence of breast cancer than someone else once they were both gone. Yes, there's always a teeny, teeny, teeny possibility it could come back in the few cells that are left, which are very few, but I have a few breast cells left somewhere. But my chances are the same as anyone else walking the streets. Also, I never have to have a mammogram again. And so for me, that was the only choice. That was just me personally. You can have ipsilateral. Many people do. And you can have one taken off and keep the other, and you can use prosthetics and all of that. Again, I wanted no part of that. We are in Hawaii a very good part of the time. We live there part of the time. I want to get in and out of the pool easy with my kids. Like, there's just so many things that, and with my filming, with everything, the ipsilateral one-sided prosthetic held no interest to me whatsoever. So bilateral was the choice. Again, it was a choice between not many things, and the few things that I did have to choose from were pretty crappy, really. I mean, who wants this? Nobody wants this. But that's why I made the choice I did. So just to go back and talk about lumpectomy also, I'll be completely honest. Let's say if they did say, oh, it's small, the tumor is small, smaller than we thought. We could do a lumpectomy and take it, and then we take the margins around it. If that happens, then typically they'll do a lumpectomy. They'll try to, you know, make it look as good as possible. And then typically you'll have to have radiation done to kill any cells that might have spread or that they didn't get. And then also typically you'll have to be on medication like a tamoxifen or a hormone blocker for 5 years. That's just very typical. And again, I'd done my research and I knew that. That didn't hold a lot of interest to me either. And some people it does. Okay, again, it is personal. I'm not saying good or bad. Please know that. I'm not saying good or bad. I am telling you that even if they said, it's a lump, we can take the lump and then do radiation, and you're on medication for 5 years, and you keep doing mammograms, and it could come back. If I was told that, I still would have chosen mastectomy. My personality, knowing side effects of meds and radiation, that's what I personally would have chosen. But I know many, 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 many people who choose lumpectomy. And honestly, the recovery is probably a whole heck of a lot easier. So you choose what's best for you. Get second opinions if you need to. Whatever you need to do to be as comfortable as you can in a really, really, really hard situation. Okay, that answers, I think, the majority of kind of the big questions around all of that. So let's move into another big question I get is why I chose implants, why I chose reconstruction. Did I ever consider not having reconstructive surgery? Why I went straight to implant, why I didn't have expanders, all of that. So I'm going to just talk through all of those things. So again, I'm choosing between two crappy things that I didn't want. I never wanted to have implants. And yes, I know there's a whole implant sickness syndrome. I know that. You don't need to tell me. I absolutely know. I was choosing between things I didn't want. So you can get a mastectomy and stay flat. Absolutely. So then there's no reconstruction. You can choose to stay flat. Again, many, many, many people do that. It's so empowering. It's beautiful. It's awesome. So that was a possibility. You can also get reconstruction, meaning reconstruct your breasts in some way, shape, or form, either through implants or through a flap. And a flap is where, or DEIP, where they use your own tissue or muscle to form your breast. Okay. So the first thing I will just say again, I don't know why I keep saying this. You know it now. This is me personally. I have friends and many clients who've had the flap or the DEIP. For me, I've seen enough clients with that as a physical therapist. It did not hold any interest for me. That's all I will say. For me personally, that was not something I was going to explore. So I didn't. So that was off the table. And I don't think I was actually a candidate for it either, to be honest. I think I asked her about it real quickly. We touched on it and I wasn't a candidate for whatever reason. So my only option then were implants if I wanted reconstruction. And I did have that conversation with my husband. I had the conversation with myself on, yeah, do I go completely flat? I mean, I was fairly small chested before, or do I go implants? And I knew pretty quickly I was going to choose implants. And why, again, that's just me. I don't know if I can dive into all the details. I can simply tell you that as a person who's had their body poked and prodded and feel like I've lost control over my body so much in my lifetime, I wasn't quite ready to lose that. I wasn't quite ready to lose that aesthetic at the age of 45. That's all I can say, as I don't think I was. And also, I really had my kids in mind. They wouldn't care. They would love me no matter what. I know that. I'm not questioning that. But I really wanted to affect them as little as possible. And again, aesthetically, that was kind of important to me. I wanted to still kind of be mom as much as they knew when I came out of surgery. And that it would have been a big change. It's just a big change. I think if I was 20 years older, I would have stayed flat probably. But again, being 45 and who I am and what I do, implants is what I chose. And then people have asked me what kind of implant. So when I met with the plastic surgeon, which I will say my plastic surgeon, my surgeon worked together all the time. That was very, very, very important to me to find two who worked together regularly. So that's what I did. And I loved all my doctors very much. So I asked her saline or silicone, because this is a new world to me. And she said silicone was the only thing that she used for mastectomy reconstruction. She said saline, those two, you can have the option if you are having augmentation. So you still have all your own tissue. But for her, when it's a full mastectomy and everything comes out, silicone is the only option to go back in. So that's what I had, silicone. And then also they were placed on top of the muscle. And that, again, you'll just ask your doctor about. You have options. They can go underneath the pec muscle or on top. But with my active lifestyle and what I do for a living, we talked through that. And really, when you're really active or working out, those kind of things, typically it's recommended to go on top. So that is what I had done. Now, let's talk about expanders, because so many people ask about that too. I know about expanders, and I know some people have to have them. I thank goodness and thank the universe every day that wasn't even anything that was discussed for me. My surgeons, like I said, work together and they do the surgery at the same time. They are both in there at the same time. So I go under anesthesia one time. My doctor does the mastectomy, takes off one. She moves to the other side. The plastic surgeon comes in and starts working on that one while the other doctor's taking off the other. Plastic surgeon moves over. They have clear communication. They work together all the time. It's done at once. I have one set of drains. Some of you have asked, like, did I regret that? Or what are the pros and cons of doing them at the same time? I have no idea what a con would be. Like, I am so thankful I did it at the same time and that that was an option for me. I know expanders have to be used sometimes in certain situations, and absolutely they do. You have to do whatever's best for you and the doctor and the stage of cancer and all of that. With mine, this is the way it went, and I'm so thankful it was one surgery. I wouldn't want to go back in for another. I would not personally want to deal with expanders ever, and I know some people who do, and all of my love goes to you if you're dealing with that right now. And I have dear friends who had them and absolutely got through them. No big deal, okay? But I can't think of a single con of doing straight to implant. That's what it's called. So I do want you to ask your doctor. If you're in the midst of this, just make sure you ask, can you do straight to implant? Because they should be able to, unless there is some kind of complication involved, which there very much might be. But mine was straight to implant, and I honestly am thankful every single moment that it was just one surgery that I had to go through. Oh, and the next question here I should add to that is, was it nipple sparing? Yes. So the DCIS had not spread to my nipples, so I was able to keep my nipples. Again, I find myself very, very, very lucky in that aspect. And so, yes, it was nipple sparing for me. Also, probably the last thing about the surgery itself, I chose to have a nerve graft done. That's something just to ask, okay? So if you don't have a nerve graft, typically you'll be numb forever. And that's just the way it is. And that I did not know that. I had no idea about that until a few weeks before my surgery. And you know, it is what it is. I mean, again, it's like, okay, that's what we're dealing with here, just to be healthy and do what we have to do for our bodies. But nerve grafting is something that's happening more and more now. My surgeon did it, but it was not covered by insurance. So that's another whole thing. I looked for different doctors. My surgeon was actually very low cost compared to someone else who was charging more. So make sure you ask around about that. I have a good friend who had the surgery done in DC and it was covered by her insurance. So just something to ask. But when they do a nerve graft, they can actually graft that nerve. And it's like 80% chance that you'll get feeling back over the next 1 to 2 years. And I would say right now, I'm half numb. I have half feeling. I have some really painful parts. It's just all a whole mixed bag as the nerves wake back up. But again, that's just something to ask, is about the nerve graft. So for those of you asking about what treatment looks like going forward. So after surgery, you have to wait a few weeks for pathology to come back, and then you'll meet with your oncologist for all the final stuff. So all the pathology came back, and for me, I don't have further treatment. Like, it's crazy. I was diagnosed with cancer, and then she said basically when I came out of my mastectomy, I was cancer-free, because there was no lymph node involvement and it wasn't found anywhere else. So I still have follow-ups. I've seen the surgeons numerous times and I will continue to do that. I have to see my oncologist for 5 years. I do still have to do exams on myself, self-exams, but I don't have to have mammograms and I don't have to have any medication. So that's where I am personally with treatment. All right, some of you had asked when you can get back to activities. This too is very, very, very much dependent on your doctor, your surgeon, your other surgeon, what surgery you had done. I mean, there's so many things. So all I can tell you is me and my surgeon. That's it. So I had drains for 2 weeks. That is very typical. You'll have drains that are the worst part of the whole thing, really. One of the worst parts of the whole thing. They're doable. They're just, you'll be glad when they're gone. So you'll have drains you have to deal with for 2 weeks at home. And you have what my doctors kept saying, T-Rex arms. Like, you just can only do things right at your side. I could brush my teeth. I could drink water and coffee. You know, that was about it. I could type. That was about it. And then the drains come out and life gets a teeny bit easier, but I was still really, really, really stiff. I could barely wash my hair. I couldn't shower while the drains were in. I could like bring my head down after 2 weeks to wash my hair a little bit. But slowly over time, I gained motion in my arms. And slowly over time, I could start doing more, but I had to be really careful with strength. I had to be really careful with lifting anything at all. Like, I really couldn't lift much. And there was something else I was going to tell you that I forgot. I had to sleep on my back exclusively for 12 weeks. I had to wear compression bras constantly for 12 weeks. When I saw her at 12 weeks, my surgeon said, "You're now allowed to do whatever you want," which is great. Like, thank you for lifting my restrictions. And also, we know that that's not how it works. I will build up slowly to get back to everything that I want to do. I still feel very weak, but I can do like a dumbbell bicep curl with 10 pounds. I can do overhead press with 10 pounds. I can do a plank. I couldn't even attempt to push up right now, but I could do a plank. I have full range of motion in my arms again, but it feels tight across my chest. I am not comfortable sleeping on my side at all, so I only sleep on my back still. I'm slowly starting to figure out what other bras I can wear, but I'm still happiest in my compression bras. They just feel the best. So for those of you asking when you can get back to work, again, it depends on your job. It depends on your prior level of fitness. It depends on your doctor and your restrictions. So that's something you definitely want to be in close contact with your doctor, and you absolutely need to be seeing a rehab specialist, a breast cancer rehab physical therapist. That's what I'm trying to tell you. She has been invaluable to me. She's the one who's answered most of my questions about restrictions and lifting. She's the one helping with my cording, with massage. She's amazing. And so I highly recommend that. All right, let's talk about cording actually. So when you have surgery for this, you will have a sentinel node biopsy. They will take some 1, 2, 3, however many lymph nodes from that side, from your armpit, to biopsy them and see if it's spread at all. And that actually is really sore. It's really sore where they take the lymph node. That side is much stiffer, takes longer, and that lymph system on that side gets very stressed, even with just one lymph node gone. So I didn't know, I knew about lymphedema, which I have not had, but I didn't know about this thing called cording that can happen, which is this like guitar strings that run from your armpit, and mine went all the way down to my thumb, and it's the lymph system being really stressed. So I've done really specific massage on it. I've worn compression sleeves. And again, that's something I've talked to my PT about. So if you have any kind of cording at all, or you wonder if you might, definitely ask your rehab professional about it. And mine is so much better now. I still have to be careful about it, but at, you know, 12 and a half weeks, it's a lot better. All right, we have a few more questions, and I put these last because they're not so much procedural. Like, those were all, you know, procedure and what exactly happened and why I had the choices and those kind of things. So these questions now, one said, what I wish I knew before. Is there anything I wish I knew before? And honestly, no, I wish I didn't have to know any of this. I don't look back and say, I really wish I would have known that, because I just wish I never had to go through it. And I hope none of you ever have to go through it. So the only thing I will say now that I definitely have an awareness of is I had no idea how many people had gone through this until I said I was going through it. And I got people out of the woodwork. I mean, and I mean people I was friends with, or at least like had known in the past and maybe lost touch with. So many people. One of my friends from college, who we just stay in touch with on social media, She reached out a week or two after my diagnosis, and she had just been diagnosed with the exact same thing. So that's all I can say is just, I'm glad now to have the awareness to look for that, to try to be the support for people who were the support for me during it. And I don't know if that fits with what I wish I knew before, but this is so common and so many people in our lives are dealing with it that we just don't know about. So I hope now I can be a better support for people going forward. I had two questions I'll kind of put into one. One is, what's the hardest surgery I've had to recover from? And one is, did surgery impact my perspective with rest and recovery? So I would say no, it didn't impact that perspective. But again, just because I've been through so many surgeries, I kind of knew what to expect. And every time I have to talk myself through the same thing, which is that I need more rest than I think I do, and that I get really anxious to get back. But no, it didn't change that. But it would have probably if this was my first surgery. But since it wasn't, since I've been through intense ones before, I know the importance of rest, absolutely. And what was the hardest surgery to recover from? Honestly, this one. And there are various reasons, but there's a lot more fear involved with this, and it happened really fast, and I didn't have time to go through all the mourning beforehand or the processing, and I still haven't. I don't think I've processed the emotions around it. I break into tears sometimes at random times. I get really sad sometimes, feeling like I've missed out on just things with my kids. I get scared. I get sad. So that was probably a big part at what made this hard. It changed my plans. I didn't want my plans changed. And also physically, it was the hardest. So I had a hysterectomy. My last surgery was 4 years ago, and I had a hysterectomy and prolapse repair. And to be honest, the hysterectomy was fine, totally fine. It was the prolapse repair that was hard. That at the time was the hardest thing I had been through for recovery. And that still, I look back, I'm like, there are parts of that that were really hard. So every surgery is hard in its own way, especially if you have complications. And each surgery can go really smoothly. Like, I think there are people who reached out to me saying, oh, my mastectomy was so easy. And I felt really bad that mine was so hard. Like, oh, what am I doing wrong? But then I had to remember, we're all different. I had some complications. I also had reconstruction. And I think a lot of people were reaching out who didn't have that, telling me it was easy. When I think a mastectomy without the reconstruction is a different beast, a different animal to deal with. So just know that. That's my lesson to anyone listening. Please do not feel any peer pressure from anyone. Like, don't even look at my feed and say, oh my gosh, she's working out at 12 weeks. Well, yeah, because that's just me. That's just me. You don't compare yourself to anyone else. Because I think I pushed myself too hard hearing from people saying, oh, it shouldn't be hurting you this much. And I realized, why am I listening to that person? I don't know. I have to listen to this body and what it's saying, and my doctor and what she's saying. So I've already lost my train of thought, but talking about, oh, how hard it was. Yeah. So it was sad and scary. It was something I didn't want. I didn't know how I was going to look afterwards. I didn't know how I was going to feel. It was something I didn't have any context around because I hadn't dealt with it before. And also, yeah, it was painful. I had, like I said, a couple complications. One is the cording that surprised me. I mean, it wasn't horrible, but it was enough that it was a surprise, just an extra layer to deal with. The biggest pain for me was I had some severe hypersensitivity, severe in my nerves, basically. And many people don't, okay? So don't let this scare you. I'll just throw it out there in case you do. Most people don't. And that's why I knew what it was because I'm a PT and I know this. But when nerves start to wake up, they can get very confused. And mine got hypersensitive. Basically, it felt like an open wound, literally across my entire chest, up to my collarbones. Like, even my hair down touching was too much. It hurt so bad. And that lasted for a long time. And I went on some nerve blockers for it. And at 12 weeks, I can say it's so much better. I'm so thankful. It's still there a little bit. Like I said, it's just the nerves are so confused. So it's still there a little bit, but oh my gosh, it's so much better. But that was really hard. So this was the hardest, no doubt. And is it doable still? Yeah, I'm here. I'm standing. I'm doing more than I was yesterday. And a lot of it's emotional. And I'm not going to discount that. A lot of it's definitely emotional. Which leads me to another question that many of you have asked. What am I doing for myself mentally? So again, if this had been my first time going through anything like this, I think therapy would have been extremely beneficial. And I absolutely think that that could help anyone going through this, okay? Especially if it's not stage zero, especially if you're told you have stage one or stage two, or it's gone to your lymph nodes, 100% I would look for a therapist or an oncology therapist. And I was given those names and I still have them if I need them. But like I said, my history is a little bit different here because at least from the surgery perspective and feeling like I've lost control of my body, I've had to deal with that already. So that piece was there. I also had very amazing people in my life, some here in person, who wouldn't let me go through this alone, who had been through it themselves. And we met for coffee and they've been texting me, how are you doing? How's this? And I had ideas to bounce off of. And I have an amazing colleague who was available to me on Instagram through DMs. And we DM'd all the time and even sent pictures. I'm like, is it supposed to look like this? Because she'd been through it. I'm like, what about the drains? That was a huge help. So if you are going through this alone, find a support group, find people to help. It is invaluable. I cannot emphasize that enough, how valuable it was to me to have people who had gone through it. I needed that. It helped me so much. I didn't just want to talk to physical therapists. I didn't want to talk even to healthcare professionals necessarily, except for my own. I wanted to talk to the people who had been through this exact thing and gone through the trenches and who had come out and who were telling me how they were doing now. That's what was the most helpful to me. And then I cried in the closet a lot. I did. And that's okay too. What I would do differently now, someone had asked, what would you do differently now? Honestly, no, I would not get cancer. I don't say that flippantly. I don't think there's anything I would do differently. I did everything I could once I was given the information I was given. And I don't think there's anything that I would do differently. I trust myself and the choices that I made. I'm not saying it's a bad question, but yeah, I think I made the choices that were absolutely right for me, and I don't question any of those choices that I made. I don't know if I would necessarily do anything differently, to be honest. And this does lead me to one other point I wanted to make or talk about, and I have a whole podcast about this, about how things just happen. I got so many questions about, I think, people wanting to know why. And that's a normal human question, absolutely, because we don't want it to happen to us. So we want to find out why so we can make different choices to prevent it from happening. Again, very normal human reaction to want to know why. I never was on HRT. I did have genetic testing. I don't have the gene. I do not have a family history. I stopped using parabens in my skincare products 20 years ago. I don't wear deodorant. I only eat organic meat and organic dairy. I took birth control for a few years and I stopped over 20 years ago. These are all questions you all have asked. I did do IVF, but just so you know, there is absolutely no research connection between IVF and breast cancer, none. There is no correlation between a hysterectomy and breast cancer. All of this to say, sometimes things just happen. Sometimes they just do. We can be what we think is the healthiest person in the world, making all the right choices, and things will just happen. And it doesn't mean we did anything wrong. And it doesn't mean that we're a bad person. So if that's you, you didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes shit just happens. It just does. All we can do is take steps forward. And also the other thing we can do is have a whole heck of a lot of compassion for people who are walking this diagnosis. Don't always look for what they did. That's not going to be helpful. You walk your journey and do the very best you can. And other people will do the same. And all you can do is have compassion and be there to help when they need you. Which leads me to the last question is, how can you help? And so many of you, so many wonderful people asked, what can I do for someone going through this? What can I do for a friend or a family member going through this? And I think that's a very lovely question. And again, I didn't know either. I never would have known. I didn't know any of this, but now I do. And I can tell you from experience what would be really helpful and what I think would be really helpful for people. And I will have links to some of this below. So go to my breast cancer resource guide. I'll have the link below for some of these links. But the first thing is my dear friend Barry has a organization called Hope Chest. And it's a great organization. You can donate there, but also you can have a sweatshirt sent to someone. And let me tell you why it's important. It's a zip-up hoodie. It's all I could wear for 2 weeks. I wore my Hope Chest sweatshirt for 2 weeks during my drains because I had to have something zip up. And it has internal pockets for the drains to sit. I wore it every single day. That as well as a homemade drain holder, which a lovely member made for me. Those are the two things I wore every single day, and really loose pants. And so order them a Hope Chest sweatshirt because it's just like a cozy blanket that they can wear, that they know they aren't alone, and it's just they need it. They're going to need something to hold those drains, and I wore it during the day, and I wore it to sleep at night. And also, there are other things you can buy. If you look at drain holders, there's pajamas. There are things that, but people will need something to hold their drains. But Hope Chest, just a great organization I support. Other things to support friends, food, obviously, or DoorDash gift cards, food delivery gift cards, even up to 4 weeks after. I know everyone gave us food for 2 weeks. It was the best gift in the world we received, was people bringing us food for 2 weeks. And I remember 4 weeks later when I still wasn't using my arms much and I had the cording, I remember thinking, I wish that we were still getting food. So like, think of that. Don't think that 2 weeks and it's done. You know, supporting even 4 weeks later is, I think, a really, really lovely thing to do. And a gift is to continue to support in some way. So food, Hope Chest sweatshirt, other things, things for the kids. I had some friends buy Lego sets for the kids. That was really important to me to keep them busy and also let them know that they were being thought of. So just, you know, maybe some new toys or something fun for the kids. Cozy blankets. I got two really cozy blankets that I continue to use every day. And this is a big one too. So I couldn't shower, like I said, for 2 weeks. And I wanted my hair washed so desperately. And I couldn't even, I know people say, just get in a chair in the shower. You have to keep in mind, I couldn't move. I couldn't lay on my back. I couldn't lay flat on my back. I couldn't lay on my stomach. I couldn't put my head back. I couldn't foot it forward. Like, I couldn't do anything. So my amazing stylist got me in just to wash my hair. And one of the, you know, I could sit in the hair washing thing with my head barely in the tub. And so I went there, my husband took me, she washed my hair and dried it, and it was the most lovely, lovely thing. And so any kind of maybe gift card to a stylist just to have hair washed, or even dry bar, some people have said, that might feel really good in those 2 weeks. Also, I have a list here, offer to drive them to appointments. I think those things can be really helpful. Offer to pick up the kids, all of that kind of stuff. Listen. Just let them talk. Listen, 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 and listen some more. And then just offering whatever they need. One of my closest friends said the most perfect thing. She said, I am here. I'm blocking off that day, my surgery day. She said, I'm blocking off that entire day for you. I will drive you to the hospital. I will pick up the kids. I will just sit here and do nothing if that's what you need. But I am here on call for what you decide you need me to do. And it just showed me that she knew me, that I didn't have to make choices or plans, but that she was there in any way, shape, or form. And that was really nice. So those are some ideas that you can do for people in your life who might be going through it. And that is it. That's what I have for you. As I sit here actually and absentmindedly rub my scars that are really sore. So 12 and a half weeks, and definitely the journey is not over. It's not even close to over. But also it does, anyone listening, 12 weeks feels like a really big place, at least for me, a really big like beginning of the next phase where I'm starting to feel better. I'm starting to feel more like myself. I'm starting to have a little more energy. The pain is starting to subside. I'm starting to be able to do a few of my previous levels of activity. So I'm getting there. It's the next level. And I hope that helps somebody out there. That's all I can ask, is that this journey helps somebody else out there. And I thank all of you. I thank you for listening. I thank you for supporting me on this journey. And please, whatever you can do to support anyone else in your life going through it, just know the one thing I've learned is once you are in this club of people, it's a club you never want to be in, but it's one full of support and full of love and full of hope even. And so thank you for anyone who's paved the path before me and is here with me along the way. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Meet Your Body. If you have a moment, please consider rating and reviewing this podcast, as it helps us tremendously. For more resources and workouts, you can visit my website, jessicavallantpilates.com, or find me on YouTube or Instagram at jessicavallantpilates.